The Volume.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there's a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, Dan Rafael is here, longtime boxing writer. His Substack is Fight Freaks Unite. You can subscribe on his Twitter account, at Dan Rafael 1. Facebook, Instagram, he's all over the place. Subscribe. It is a terrific newsletter that you can read every single day. What's up, Dan?
Hey, Chris, good to be on with you again, as always. You know I'm a friend of the pod.
You are a friend of the pod, a true friend of the pod. And this is going to be the first pod, Dan, where I'm opening it with a little bit of excitement, like a little positivity. Last couple of weeks, I've been pretty down, you know, hosting this podcast for all the reasons that boxing pisses you off. This week, I'm mildly enthused. We are going to get a decent fight involving Terrence Crawford. This after Top Rank and PBC made a deal to see Crawford and Sean Porter fight for Crawford's welterweight title on November 20th. This is easily, I think, the biggest fight of Terrence Crawford's career, bigger than Victor Postol, bigger than any of the fights he had at 135. I'm excited about this. November 20th, Las Vegas. I'm hoping to be there. I think it's an excellent fight for Terrence Crawford. What do you think?
Couldn't agree with more. I mean, you said everything exactly what I think. It is the biggest fight of Terrence Crawford's career. He's had a great career, and he's beaten, you know, some good opponents, and he's won several titles. He was undisputed at 140, won the title at 135, and also at 147 has made numerous defenses. But Terrence Crawford knows he'll be the first to admit that he's lacked that true elite opponent, frankly, in any of those weight classes. And Sean Porter is a guy that has fought everybody. He's got one of the best resumes in the sport in terms of the competition he's faced. Now, he's lost a couple of fights, fine. But if you take a look at, particularly in the welterweight division, such a deep weight class, he's fought basically everybody. If you remove Pacquiao from the equation, he's fought Errol Spence in a very close fight. He's fought Danny Garcia. He's fought Keith Thurman. He's fought Ordenes Ugas. You know, and even he's fought guys like Paulie Malignaggi and Devin Alexander, and certainly the first loss of his career against Kell Brook in a close fight. Now he's fighting Terrence Crawford. There's nobody other than Pacquiao that has that kind of list of opponents on their resume in the welterweight division. And Sean Porter is a guy that has proven time and again for a number of years that he is not afraid to fight anybody, win or lose. You know, he makes good money, he makes good fights, and I'm thrilled. I mean, if we couldn't get Crawford against Errol Spence, you know, I'll take Terrence Crawford against Sean Porter. If you have to take a supposed replacement fight, let's say. I mean, not that fight between him and Errol was ever made, but this is the next best thing. I'm super excited for it. It's a real good matchup, in my opinion.
Yeah, and even when Porter has lost, it's been by some of the narrowest of margins.
Sure.
Whether it was to Keith Thurman or to Errol Spence. So he is a legitimate top flight 147 pounder who is going to press Crawford in ways he's never been pressed before. And I think we're really going to see what Terrence Crawford is made of in a fight like this. But you know what my biggest takeaway from this fight being made, Dan? Not Crawford fighting Porter, not Top Rank and PBC working together, but isn't this how sanctioning bodies should work? Shouldn't they be proponents, advocates, conduits, whatever word you want to use, to making big fights? I mean, we saw the WBO do this, and it forced Top Rank and PBC to come to the table and cut a deal to make this fight. We're seeing it potentially happen with Artur Beterbiev and Marcus Brown. We're seeing, it's a lesser fight, but I think still a good one, Roger Gutierrez, Chris Colbert, a four-man box-off at 147 for the WBA welterweight title. I don't know how long it's going to last, Dan, but to me, this is exactly how sanctioning bodies should work. They have the power to be facilitators four big fights if they would only exercise it in the way we're seeing it happen this month.
You're again, we don't always agree, but we agree on this also. The WBO kind of took some folks by surprise when they ordered the fight between Terrence Crawford and Sean Porter, and I was happy that they did. And, you know, even if Top Rank and TGB Promotions and PBC hadn't have come to the table and made a deal, it would have gone to a purse bid, and the fight probably would have happened because Terrence Crawford was not about to vacate his title or allow himself to be stripped of something that is important to him and that he's worked hard for, and then frankly helps get him get higher purses for his events. So that fight was always going to take place, be it in the purse bid form or in terms of the two sides making a deal. They made the deal. It's going to be a big event, in my opinion. A terrific fight. You mentioned some of those other matches. Those are WBA fights. And since they took what I consider to be a necessary step to strip or at least downgrade guys from interim champions, I didn't necessarily think they had to strip all the interim champions. I felt like they could just order them to fight the number one guys or the second tier title holders, so be it. But in the case of a fight you mentioned, like Colbert and Gutierrez, real good matchup between, you know, maybe not the most popular or well-known guys, but guys that make pretty good fights and have some talent, and, you know, they're going to have to fight each other. It's going to be probably the best opponent of each of their careers, in my mind. You know, if Better Biev against Marcus Brown takes place, that's a fight that is a WBC fight that's headed to a purse bid, most likely, unless PBC and Top Rank make a deal. Another, you know, good matchup. I thought it was kind of funny when that fight was that purse bid was supposed to take place this coming Friday, and Top Rank and PBC had spent all this time hashing out the details to get the Porter and Crawford fight done. And so I asked them, I said, hey guys, what about this fight? And basically the response to me from both sides was, you know, well, we kind of forgot about it, the deadline, because we were so busy getting the other fight done. So they went to the WBC, they asked for the extension, they were given the extension, and, you know, hopefully they can make a deal. Otherwise, once again, the fight will go to a purse bid, and, you know, I guess we'll see another pretty solid matchup in the light heavyweight division, and so on and so forth. And that's going to happen with a lot of these other WBA former interim champions who were now put in the position of a mandatory challenger and or order to fight eliminator. So in terms of the sanctioning bodies, how they should work, this is how they should work. Now, if only some of the organization would order some other similar fights, I wish that the WBC would order the fight between Teofimo Lopez and Devin Haney. You know, let's get it on. I mean, there's a question about that belt because of their making Lomachenko the franchise champion. And then, of course, Teofimo beat him to win that title. Haney got upgraded from the interim to the full title, and they've been yapping back and forth. There's one way to settle it, and that's to fight each other. But unless an order is made, I just don't see that fight happening. So the sanctioning bodies have done well in this situation that we're talking about. They could do better.
They could, but I agree with you 100% on Haney against Lopez. I mean, why the WBC wouldn't immediately order that after Lopez fights Kambosos is beyond me. They never intended for Lopez to be the franchise champion. Why do you want that belt around his waist? That was Vasily Lomachenko's title. So if Lopez gets through Kambosos, why not immediately say Devin Haney, Teofimo Lopez, negotiate or go to purse bid? Either way, if you're Teofimo Lopez or Devin Haney, you win. If you cut a deal, it's probably going to be a good one. If it goes to purse bid, Teofimo Lopez knows purse bids work. They get you paid a big amount of money. So if you go to purse bid, maybe Triller comes back wanting to have a relationship with you. Maybe Eddie Hearn steps up wanting a big fight for Devin Haney on DAZN. Maybe Top Rank believes that's a big fight on pay-per-view. I don't get it. I don't get why both those guys wouldn't push the WBC to order it. And I don't get even more why the WBC wouldn't immediately order it.
I agree with that also. In terms of the Lopez and Top Rank side, the only fly in that ointment might be that they hope to make a rematch between Teofimo Lopez and Vasily Lomachenko, which, by the way, is a terrific matchup also, and I think the rematch should happen. But believe me, if you want to tell me it's going to be Teofimo against Lomachenko too, terrific. It's going to be Teofimo.
But do you really care? Like, I'll let you answer. But I'll let you answer. But like, I don't care about Teofimo Lomachenko too. I just don't. Like, there are so many better matchups out there for him.
No, but it's not an unreasonable fight because of the fact that Lomachenko, you know, I'm not saying, you know, people say it's an excuse. It's just he had shoulder surgery on a damaged shoulder after the fight. And even with a messed up shoulder, he still was coming on super strong in the late part of the fight. And yes, he lost, you know, an 8-4, maybe 7-5 kind of fight. But, you know, the caliber of career that Lomachenko has had and things he has done, he deserves a rematch. And if they make the rematch, I'm fine with it. But I was going to say also, if they don't make the rematch and instead it was an order of fighting or making him fight between Lopez and Haney, I'm good for that also. Now, Lopez, of course, is sort of put the kibosh on wanting to do the rematch. He, you know, he first said no. His father went on the ESPN broadcast after Lomachenko made his comeback against Nakatani and scored a spectacular win, you know, in a tremendous performance, and said, yeah, we'll do the rematch with stipulations, which is we have to have our mandatory against Kambosos, and then it has to be the next fight after that. That was no problem on the Lomachenko side. And then Teofimo Jr., the champion, he went on the broadcast last week when Oscar Valdez was in his title defense and basically said, no, I'm not doing that. He has eyes on moving up to 140 in his mind to challenge the undisputed champion, Josh Taylor. But, you know, Josh is fighting on December 18th. It's no guarantee that he wins that fight, and it's no guarantee, even if he does it, they'll be able to put that match together, even if they're with the same promoters. The point is, the sanctioning bodies can order those fights, and whatever happens, happens. I mean, make the order, and if it doesn't happen, it's not on the sanctioning body. It's on the fighters or their camps why a match does or does not happen. Plenty of times, sanctioning bodies order a fight that doesn't end up happening, but you can't blame the sanctioning body.
No, you can't. But you care more about Lomachenko, Lopez, and I do. I just don't care. It does nothing for me, especially when Devin Haney's lurking out there. Like, Devin Haney is coming off the biggest win of his career, beating Jorge Linares in a very competitive fight, a very compelling fight. The time to me is now to make a fight between those guys, which would, as you alluded to, settle the differences, settle whatever dispute there may be about whether there's an undisputed champion at 135 pounds. That is an excellent fight, and I think a much more appealing fight, to me anyway, than Lomachenko, Lopez, too.
I don't think it's unreasonable for you to have that position, but I don't think it's unreasonable for me to have my position. And I'm sure there's lots of boxing fans that agree with you and many that will also agree with me. The point is, they're both good matchups. They both would be good for the sport. And, you know, flip a coin, I'll take either one of them, frankly.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can't go terribly wrong with either one. I just, Lopez won convincingly, and I get the shoulder injury to Lomachenko, all that, but Lomachenko, he had his chances in the first six rounds to actually fight. He didn't. And you have to kind of own that if you're Lomachenko. All right. I want to take it a step further though, with the sanctioning bodies, to remind people that sanctioning bodies can order champion versus champion. They can do it. Like, they don't traditionally put champions in their rankings of other sanctioning bodies, but they can, and we've seen some high profile examples of that. Top of my head, WBC trying to make Adonis Stevenson against Sergey Kovalev many years ago. Like, as we sit here, Dan, there is no reason the WBC can't order Jermall Charlo against Demetrius Andrade. There is no reason that they can't do it. And again, why they wouldn't do it, I don't understand. I mean, Jermall Charlo came off a performance against Juan Montiel that nobody cared about. They didn't care. Are you really going to want to be part of another fight just like that? I mean, there's no opponents out there for Jermall Charlo at 160 right now. He's not going to fight David Benavidez. We know that at this point. Demetrius Andrade, same thing. He fought Liam Williams in the afternoon in the U.S. He's been trying to get a big fight. If he doesn't get one, he'll come back against somebody he'll be a heavy favorite against. The WBC's come under fire for very good reasons as of late. This could be the way to work their way back into the good graces of boxing fans. Order fights involving other champions and start with Demetrius Andrade against Jermall Charlo. Let's see once and for all who is ducking who in that matchup.
A couple of things about that. Number one, the WBC, to my recollection, is the only sanctioning body that has taken that measure to place another champion from a different organization in its ratings and order the fight. You mentioned the highest profile example of that being the fight that never happened between Adonis Stevenson and Kovalev. The other organizations have not done that. But what has to occur in the case of what happened with Kovalev and Stevenson, my memory is correct, the Kovalev camp asked for the WBC to do that. And they said, okay, so for them to order a Charlo Andrade fight, I think to get the ball rolling, the onus, frankly, would be on the Andrade camp for somebody from his team, whether it's Eddie Hearn, the promoter, or Ed Ferris, the manager, or, you know, his father, Paul Andrade, who was also his trainer, whoever it is, should contact or have some communication or dialogue with the WBC and asking them to do that. That's got to get the ball rolling. The WBC is not just going to unilaterally order the champion from another organization to fight its champion and put it in their ratings. If that champion comes to them and asks for it, I think they would strongly consider it. You know, I know Mauricio Sulaiman, the president of the WBC, very well. I believe that he would be open to those types of discussions and requests from champions who want to fight for his organization also, in addition to the organization that they fight for presently. So if Andre's team is serious, they could take that step by having a dialogue with the WBC and explaining their desires for the fight and asking them to order, you know, to place him in the ratings and to
you
order
think
that.
Do you think that's really necessary though, Dan? Like, I mean,
yes, it is necessary. You got to follow. There's got to be a protocol. There's got to be a protocol.
Mauricio doesn't have his head in the sand here. Like, he knows that Demetrius Andrade wants to fight Jermall Charlo. He's been speaking on it on every platform that he has been on.
Well, the one platform they haven't spoke on is go to the WBC and ask for it. Ask for it. That'll get the ball rolling. You and I can sit here and yammer about it, and we can say that they must realize that he wants to fight, and fans can tweet about it. But until there's something official, it's still a business. There are still rules to follow. There's still protocols. Have somebody from Demetrius's camp contact the WBC and say, we would like this to happen, and see what happens. You got to get the ball rolling in an official way. You know, you and I yapping about it doesn't make a damn bit of difference. And the same goes for guys who tweet, or it's not just going to suddenly come into Mauricio's mind. He's got 1,000 other issues to deal with.
Let
it be one of the things on his desk. Let it be one of the things on his desk. Okay, so that, again, the onus is on the boxer that wants the big fight, not on the sanctioning body. If he's already rated, fine, but that's not the case. And so I'm not saying you're wrong about that they could do the fight, but the onus is on the WBO champion, Demetrius Andrade, to put that into their minds and get the ball rolling.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. I think it's letting the WBC off the hook a bit.
No, it's not letting them off the hook at all. If you have to make the
like
effort.
I mean, I know he's got a lot of things on. I know he's got. I mean, what? So, like, an email to Mauricio would resolve that. Like, that's by the
way,
Mauricio
would resolve that. But you have to have the promoter or the manager of Demetrius contact Mauricio. Mauricio, we are representing the WBO middleweight champion Demetrius Andrade. You know, we would like to have a fight with your champion Charlo. You know, we know you've done this type of thing in the past. You know, we hereby request for you to place us in the ratings and order the fight. You got to do it in official. Do it officially.
Okay. I mean, I get it. But isn't the reverse also true? Like, hey, wouldn't Mauricio say, hey, maybe Demetrius wants to fight Charlo? Maybe we can stop having these dog shit fights with our middleweight champion, one of the most prestigious divisions in all of boxing?
Look, they could do the same thing. I mean, you got to have a featherweight champion, Gary Russell, that fights once every six, you know, every once a year and talks about fighting, you know, more than that, but only gets in the ring once. They could order another fight against a big name, and when he does fight, it's against a mandatory. But again, the onus is sometimes on the champion. He's fulfilled his mandatories. Again, I'm big on protocol. You know, the onus is on them, not on the organization. Look, and you know me, Chris, a long time. I can rip an organization as good as anybody. Okay, I don't think the WBC deserves to be ripped because they're not ordering a champion from another organization to fight their guy. By the way, the WBO, the IBF, and the WBA, again, to my recollection, have never ordered a champion from another organization to fight a champion from a rival organization. So at least
insane.
The WBC,
like,
they'll do it.
I agree. It's insane for all these sanctioning bodies to not have done. I understand there's a reason for not putting champions in your rankings. You want to give non-champions opportunities to become champions. I get that. But I don't know why these sanctioning bodies wouldn't be clamoring to be involved in big fights, because their sanctioning fee goes up in bigger fights, Dan. They make more money. They have better exposure. Like, why they wouldn't be proactive in trying to make these fights happen is beyond me. I'll tell you what, you may be right. Maybe there should be a formal process. But if we get to the last couple of months of this calendar year and it's Jermall Charlo versus somebody versus Fighter X, who's 100-1 underdog, and Demetrius Andrade versus Fighter Y, who's 100-1 underdog, I'm going to lose my mind, and I'll probably do it like on social media,
like,
and I'm sure
going to
do it on the air. I'm sure going to, like, I've done this. I already napalmed the WBA once. Like, I have no problem, you know, going after these people, because this is what's wrong with boxing. Boxing absolutely can be a great sport. It can have matchups people are dying for, but it gets in its own way far too often. That's just how I'm feeling about this. All right.
Listen, you and I, just real quick, you and I agree on that. We just have a slight difference of opinion on the manner in which it should occur.
Right. Correct. Correct. The biggest game this Sunday is Chiefs versus Ravens, and FanDuel Sportsbook is about to make it even bigger because FanDuel is giving new customers 30-1 odds on either team to win. That means you can end the weekend right by winning $150 on a $5 bet. Now, me, I never bet against Patrick Mahomes, so I am taking the Chiefs and the over in this game. Offers like this are just one of the many reasons I love betting the NFL on FanDuel. It is the number one rated sportsbook app in America. It's easy to use, it's safe and secure, and it has fast payouts. FanDuel is sports betting made simple, and they're always hooking you up with great offers. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid in as little as 24 hours. See for yourself why FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook. Just sign up with promo code BOXING this Sunday. Before the Chiefs take on the Ravens, you could win $150 on a $5 bet. Remember to use promo code BOXING so they know I sent you. That's promo code BOXING exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. All right, from real boxing to a farce. Last weekend, Evander Holyfield, 58 years old, in the ring against Vitor Belfort. And this was, if it's possible to sink below the bar that I had for this fight, I wouldn't even call it a fight, it was an exhibition. If it was possible to sink below that bar, it did. Vitor Belfort, at 44 years old, comes out, blitzes Holyfield. The referee stops the fight after Holyfield is knocked down once. I would have stopped it right after the knockdown, but then stops it after Belfort comes in and just blasts away. This is after we saw Anderson Silva knock out Tito Ortiz in the first round of their fight. The Florida Commission sanctioned all of it. Triller promoted it a little bit misleadingly, if you ask you and me. Of all the things that were embarrassing, Dan, about that show, what stands out to you the most?
I mean, there's so many things to choose from, but I have to say the thing that's most...
It's a buffet of embarrassing.
It is a buffet of embarrassment. The most embarrassing, pathetic, disgusting, reprehensible, pick an adjective, thing that occurred is that Triller outright lied to the public, deceived the public on purpose with impunity. Let me repeat, Triller lied and deceived the public on purpose with impunity by proclaiming, marketing, promoting, and bullshitting that these were actual official sanctioned fights when they were in fact exhibitions. I was writing about that ahead of the fight, certainly about the Holyfield and Belfort fight. Now, Anderson Silva against Tito Ortiz, originally when this card was supposed to be De La Hoya Belfort, which was sanctioned as an official fight in California, Silva Ortiz was sanctioned as an actual fight. The David Haye fight against Joe Fournier, which was on the undercard, the California Commission would not sanction as an official fight, but as an exhibition. When they moved the event to Florida because Oscar had COVID and fell out of the fight, and they put Evander Holyfield in to the match, California would not sanction that fight, to their credit, as an exhibition or as an official fight. So on, they went to Florida, which is venue shopping, which should not be allowed, in my opinion. In any event, it went to Florida, and Holyfield Belfort was not, it wasn't that the Florida Commission wouldn't approve it. They probably would have, as they said in their statement. But the Holyfield camp, their contract with the venue, with Triller, called for it to be an exhibition. The Ortiz and Silva fight turned out to be an exhibition. I thought it would still be an official fight also because California had approved it. They tried to say that the Hay fight against Fournier was now an official fight, but in reality, it also was only an exhibition. So the number of lies and just dirty pool associated with that fight was just beyond. I mean, I've seen a lot of bad stuff in my time of covering boxing. That was about as bad as it gets in terms of just outright lies from promoters about a number of different topics. You know, I suspect, I don't have proof, that they wanted to make it look like a real fight to engender gambling on the fight. I mean, but let me ask you a question. If you thought this was a real fight and you went and made a wager on any number of legal betting websites that carried action on the event, and then you found out it was an exhibition, wouldn't you be ticked off? I would. I don't bet on fights, but if I did and I thought it was a real fight and it turned out to be an exhibition, I'd be pretty ticked off. So the way that they went about that, I felt was horrible. Now, in terms of the actual event that occurred on September 11th, you know, the Fournier thing, they went through the motions. David actually looked decent, coming back after a long layoff, but he was fighting his friend. I felt like he carried him. I felt like if he wanted to, he dropped him in the first round with a jab. If he wanted to get him out of there, it lasted maybe 30 more seconds or maybe one more round, not, you know, eight rounds. So, you know, but he got in. And again, it was quasi-entertaining, but an exhibition. You know, the one real fight on the card between Andy Ventzis and John O'Carroll, that was actually a good entertaining fight. You know, two sort of second-tier contenders in the 130-pound division, but both, you know, still with a chance to maybe do something and fight for a title. They put on a pretty good fight. So I'll give him credit for a nice matchup there. You know, Ortiz Silva, exhibition. You know, I was part of a preview show about the event on Fight that we taped when we still thought it was we originally thought it was the De La Hoya fight. It switched to Holyfield, so we did that on short notice. But all of the guys that were on the panel, myself and others, we all said that Silva was going to mop up Tito Ortiz, and that's exactly what happened, a sick one-punch knockout, but obviously not a competitive fight. And in terms of the main event, you know, we all knew Holyfield shouldn't be fighting at 58. I thought I was the only guy on the panel that picked Belfort to win. But if you asked me how, I would not have said it was going to be a first-round stoppage. Evander not only got knocked down, which is something that didn't happen on a regular basis when he was fighting, you could tell from the first 20 seconds when he took a weird step back when Belfort sort of touched him barely with a jab that his legs were just gone. He had no balance at all. Then he swung wildly with the left hand and fell through the ropes. I mean, and then he got knocked down, and then it was just a matter of time. And Belfort knows this is an exhibition, you know, but went after him. You know, when Roy Jones and Mike Tyson had their exhibition, also a thriller card in the fall of last year, a fight that did huge business, the two fighters knew we're going to put on a good show. We're not going to go after each other to get a knockout. We're not going after to hurt each other. And they knew that. That was spoken to them, and they were gentlemen, and they followed the rules, and they put on a fun, entertaining show, and that was that. Belfort, you know, didn't do that. You know, he went all, you know, Drago Apollo Creed on Holyfield. And you saw what happened. I'm glad it's over. It was horrendous. Having Donald Trump provide commentary was even more disgusting. And, you know, and the fight did horrible business, if that's a silver lining. It did 150,000 buys, I am told, between the streaming and the linear television, which means around a $7.5 million gross, not net gross. And the purses were way more than that for the card combined, not to mention, you know, a lot of other expenses that went into it. So they lost a lot of money on that event. Serves them right.
The Florida Commission allowed a 58-year-old man to get into the ring. Full stop. That was
and said they supported it as a thriller sent out a statement from their executive director saying that they were okay with it. Now the fighters ultimately did not accept it as officially a sanctioned fight, but the Florida Commission was ready, willing, and able to sanction not only that bout, but the other exhibitions, Fournier, Hay, as well as Silva and Ortiz. And I always had some respect for the Florida Commission. I've covered a number of fights in Florida over the years. I've always found them to be forthright. I've always found them to be reasonable and open to talk to the media about different things. They never had any reason to think that they were not like a legit commission. They proved themselves in this event that they're garbage.
I agree. Even if you thought that Holyfield had something left in the tank, which would be an incredible thing to believe as it is, all you had to do was watch that open workout on Wednesday that was on YouTube and see this guy's got nothing. Like, he's slow. He's old. He's 58 years old. He has now, no business
in
being
defense
in the
of
ring.
That. In defense of that, you and I have seen open workouts and fighters, you know, come before the public
not
and the
like
press
that,
prior
though.
To a fight.
Not like that. Not no, like but that. They he, often looked, don't, he looked ancient in that.
I'm not arguing the point, but I'm saying that you can't judge it because guys don't show what they might have in that. But when commissions agree to sanction fights like this, they watch them privately. So for example, before Andy Foster and the California Commission agreed to sanction Oscar De La Hoya against Belfort, I guarantee you that members of that commission, experienced boxing people and regulators, went to the gym privately and watched Oscar work out, watched him spar, watched him hit the mitts, watched him do the kinds of things that would allow them to assess his ability to be in a boxing match. I believe that is one of the reasons that they refused to sanction Holyfield Belfort, because they were trying to make the fight on such short notice that it would not have allowed the commission to appropriately do its due diligence on Evander's condition, not in terms of passing a medical test, but in terms of letting your eyes see in the ring what the man is capable of at that age. Florida obviously did not do that. So I'm not saying that it was the open work that would have been the difference, but what they needed to do, maybe they did it and they still were willing to sanction. I don't know the answer to that, but they would have gone in California and also in a place like Nevada, they would have taken a look at the boxer, privately to try to assess their condition. Clearly Evander did not have anything. It was embarrassing. And the big thing about it for Evander is he ultimately didn't get hurt. It only lasted, a short period of time, the fight, obviously. And he got paid many, many millions of dollars to make him solvent now financially and also for his children. So that's a silver lining. That's a good thing. Evander Holyfield, as great of a legend as he's been in the sport for, 25 years, unfortunately did not have the money that he should have had because of his own fault in many respects of how he blew through it when he was making huge amounts of money. And now knowing that this was the last hurrah payday-wise, he's got millions of dollars now that he can live comfortably for the rest of his life, as long as he doesn't do the things that he did previously.
One thing I'd add to that, Dan, we'll see if he gets paid, Jones.
I have talked to the Holyfield camp. The money is there. They got paid. Okay. Not an issue.
All right.
The money was put in escrow before the fight and the money has been released and he has his money.
But Holyfield coming out of that unscathed doesn't, somehow validate the Flores decision.
No, it doesn't.
It really is, Dan. It's like a guy drunk getting into a car and making it home. You're like, look, I can drive drunk. It's just because you didn't kill somebody.
You're right. If there's a silver lining, no matter what Evander's desire is, because the performance was so bad, worse than anybody could have anticipated, even if you thought it was going to be, a dumpster fire, it turned out to be, to call it a dumpster fire was an insult to dumpster fires. It means that there's really no chance in any real manner for him to have the fight, another exhibition, and do it against Mike Tyson.
No, there's no reason to see that under any circumstances.
But that was what they were trying to strive towards.
If Holyfield looked like Tyson and Tyson looked pretty good when he came back last year, if he looked like Tyson, maybe you could have an exhibition in California between those two guys. But Holyfield should be nowhere near a ring. And Dan, that fight went exactly as I thought it was going to, because I knew Vitor Belfort was going to come out with something to prove. If he goes out there and looks spectacular against Evander Holyfield, it sets himself up for another payday. And that's exactly what Ryan Kavanaugh and Triller are trying to create. I mean, they're out there offering, $30 million? Winner take all for Vitor Belfort against Jake Paul? They're making these, they're calling out Canelo? What are we doing?
That's all red herring promotional stuff, because unless I'm missing something, I don't ever remember there being an authentic winner take all fight. People say that all the time, but it's never true. Nobody's going to fight for free.
Take it back. Hey, hold on. Shane Mosley apparently did.
It wasn't by design. It wasn't like winner take all. And by the way,
people that know that story, Shane Mosley allegedly bet $1 million on himself against Canelo Alvarez in 2012, a fight that he says he was paid $600,000 for. So for getting his ass kicked by Canelo, he effectively had to pay $400,000. So
I mean, look, when Roy Jones
shout out Shane Mosley.
When Roy Jones had his rematch against Bernard Hopkins, the way that deal was constructed was that Bernard got his guarantee from Golden Boy and a percentage of whatever upside there was, but Roy Jones didn't start to get any money until it reached a certain threshold, and it didn't reach that threshold. So reality was that Roy Jones fought for zero against Bernard Hopkins in the rematch and lost in a pretty, clear manner. And they can ask for Belfort against Jake Paul, that he can go and rant and rave and say, I want to fight Canelo, blah, blah, blah. Given the struggles that Triller has shown in some of these events, I don't think they have $30 million to spend on that kind of fight.
I'm mystified, Dan. I don't know what their end game is with all this. They took a financial bath on this one. They're going to take another financial bath on Teofimo Lopez against George Campos. They already have taken a bath on that fight with the postponement from June. I don't know. I mean, Ryan Kavanaugh's got a lot of money. Triller's got deep pockets. But at some point, you got to look around and be like, we're just burning through hundreds of millions of dollars at this point.
Well, call me cynical. I'm not saying this happened, but you say, how could this go on? So let me pose a theory. And I don't know if this is true. I'm not making accusations. I don't want to get in trouble with anybody. I'm just saying it comes to your mind. If you know that Holyfield Belfort is an exhibition, you market it as a real fight, and Belfort, is going to go out there and try to get rid of Holyfield. and there's odds posted. Maybe there's money bet in all kinds of different places, and they're able to cut their losses by laying the action and winning big on Belfort by knockout. I'm just saying, it's not, I mean, dirty stuff happens in boxing. So you ask, how is it possible? I just gave you a hypothetical way, not just Triller, but anybody could do that. And I'm not saying it was a fixed fight in the sense that a Holyfield, you know, said, I will lose, and Belfort said, I will do this. It's not like it's scripted the way it would be a WWE match. But again, if you think, if Holyfield thinks it's an exhibition, he's not going to go all out. Now, Belfort knows it's an exhibition contractually, but says, I'm going to go all out. And the company that's involved knows the same thing. You know, you can go out there and you can put a lot of money and you can make that back big time.
Let me say this. If you,
how cynical is that?
No, I get it. I'm just, my thing is, if you were out there as a gambler and you put a nickel on a 58-year-old man to win something, you're a dumbass. You're the worst gambler in the history of gambling. 58-year-old men don't win boxing matches against 44-year-old guys that are at or around their weight. Just doesn't happen. I'm sorry. It does not happen. So you're an idiot for betting on Evander Holyfield. Let me finish with this, Dan. Yeah, agreed. Oscar Valdez beats Robeson Canseco. Competitive fight. I think Valdez was probably a little mentally drained from everything that had gone on in the week. Stuff that he brought on himself, for the record. That fight's over. The drug testing stuff with that fight is now over. Does Valdez just move on? Like, is there any further fallout for Oscar Valdez when it comes to testing positive prior to this fight with Canseco?
I think he just moves on because, and no, not to belabor this, you know, I've discussed this ad nauseum and written about it. I'm not giving Oscar Valdez a pass. I'm not saying it's good to use or take things that are banned. However, the substance that he took that came back in microscopic amounts compared to what it would normally be if it was an amount that showed evidence of like serious usage was not banned by the place that sanctioned and regulated the fight. So I don't like it, but he was free and clear to box. That's what he did. Won a close fight. You know, Consacao is now protesting and filing a, asking for, you know, to be overturned or hurting that. And that's not going anywhere. That's like umpires calling balls and strikes in a baseball game.
Yeah.
I doubt that a rematch is going to be ordered. I mean, it's possible. So I do think, yes, Oscar Valdez is moving on. He will sit and watch what occurs on October 23rd between the WBO 130-pound champion, Jamel Herring, against the interim title holder, Shakur Stevenson. And Oscar would like the winner of that fight. Herring and Shakur would like that to fight Valdez if they win. It's a fight the Top Rank would like to do. They've said it repeatedly. It's a pretty big fight. You know, if Herring wins, it's interesting. If Shakur wins, maybe it's a little bigger just because of the youth involved. But either way, Oscar Valdez in a unification against the winner of that fight, you know, it's the biggest fight you can make in the 130-pound weight class. And it's a fight that Top Rank is ready, willing, and able to do. So, yes, Oscar Valdez, goodbye, Robeson Canseco. Goodbye, drug testing, headaches, and move on to the next fight.
Yeah, I mean, I said this last week, and it bears repeating. My biggest issue was with the WBC for allowing Valdez to keep his title. They contracted VADA to do this, and when he tests positive for a banned substance per VADA, I don't know why that's not a fairly cut-and-dry case, especially in the WBC. I mean, David Benavidez tested positive for cocaine, which, to my knowledge, is not a performance enhancer. Gave the WBC license to strip Benavidez. I don't know why they allowed Valdez to keep his title. I mean, they are the ones, Dan, that brought the WBC, that brought VADA into this. Like, they hired them, and when they catch a guy, to allow it to be no consequences struck me as cynical.
A couple things there. Number one, Benavidez, like you mentioned, was stripped, and he wasn't even training for a fight. That's the first thing. The second thing is the WBC contracts with VADA to do their clean boxing programming, but in the case of Oscar Valdez against Consacao, they contract with VADA on their own to construct the program the way the Top Rank does for fights involving their bigger names. And that's guys like Crawford, like Valdez, like Lomachenko, Teofimo, etc. That was not a clean boxing program situation. That was Top Rank on behalf of the boxers involved contracting with VADA to do a specialized program for that fight, as opposed to the clean boxing program, which does not do a specialized program. That's just the notion that you could be tested at any time. So in my mind, it raises it even more in terms of the WBC. Again, I respect Mauricio Suleiman. I can, you know, I talk to him about these issues on a regular basis. We don't agree on everything. And I do think the way that maybe they could have so-called split the baby on this is the regulatory body that was overseeing the fight, Oscar Valdez, was not in violation of their drug testing protocols. Whether anybody wants to acknowledge that or believe that or not and cry and moan about it on Twitter, let them do that. But the facts are he did not violate the regulatory agents, the body's drug testing protocol.
Okay, but then why did the WBC punish him? They punished him.
I just said
straddling the fence here.
That's the way to split the baby. The fight goes forward because he didn't violate the rules of the regulatory body overseeing the fight, but he did violate the rules of the sanctioning body that gave him the title. And the way that these things work is the regulatory body, in this case, the tribal commission at Casino del Sol, they control the fight, whether a guy can get in the ring. WBC has every right to control the belt. So yes, they could have, maybe should have stripped Oscar Valdez, and Oscar Valdez still should have been able to fight. Now, whether the fight would have then been taking place if there was no title at stake, I don't know. You'd have to ask Top Rank and their people about that. But I don't disagree. The fight happened as it should have based on their rules, and it probably shouldn't have been for the WBC title. We agree.
They released that kind of smarmy, condescending statement like, I wish people would, you know, do their homework before reacting to stuff. That's fine. Like, if they truly believed that Oscar Valdez did nothing wrong, they could have just said that. But instead, they're taking his sanctioning fee and contributing it to the Clean Boxing Program. They're basically, to boil it down, making him do community service with them. Like, either you do something wrong or you didn't. And they're kind of trying to make it seem like it was both. Like, on one hand, Phentermine is not a performance enhancer. On the other hand, Oscar Valdez got to do X, Y, and Z to make up for testing positive for Phentermine. I don't get the
I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree. The only thing I know for sure is that Phentermine taken or tested positive on August 13th is not in violation of WADA rules for a fight that took place a month later, period.
By the way, let me just say this. Like, I think I said this on last week's show. There's nobody on earth that takes more supplements than I do. Like, I read something in the New York Times, like, I'm going to buy it. Like, I see something on TV, chances are I'm going to buy it. My medicine cabinet is full of crap, like stuff that when I go to the doctor's office for my regular physical, my doctor literally laughs at me for the number of things that I'm taking. Not that they're going to hurt me, but like, they're not going to really do much for me. You know, it's just, you're just going to basically get, it's going to come out of your body one way or the other. The fact that Oscar Valdez can't pinpoint how he might have tested positive, to me, reeks. Like, I could tell you everything that I put in my body. I'm not a professional fighter. Like, as far as I know, there's no herbal tea that has Phentermine in it. As far as I know, there's no vitamins that have Phentermine in it. Nobody has suggested, so I don't...
I agree with that. And what Oscar Valdez should have probably done is say, yeah, I took Phentermine because it wasn't banned out of competition.
Yes. Period. Yes. He should have said that. He should have said that. Like, at least Canelo had... When he tested positive for clenbuterol, you could point and maybe... They, you know, knew this as a good excuse. You could point to clenbuterol being present in Mexican meat. Like, you can say, here's why. Oscar Valdez does not give any kind of explanation that makes any sense. And that makes me suspect of him in this particular case.
That's a fair point. And I mean, you know, again, I didn't like the reasoning, the way that was handled. But the end result, I didn't have a problem with the fight occurring based strictly on the fact that the regulatory agency that oversaw the fight, it was allowable by their rules. And that's the only thing. What the rules are in New York or Nevada or, you know, wherever, London, wherever the fight would take place, it wasn't against the rules in Casino del Sol, period, full stop. I mean, and people have to understand that. Now, we can have the discussions about where they handled it, how it really got in his system, what the situation was in terms of how the WBC should have handled it. All that's open for discussion. What is not open for discussion is that he was not in violation of the rules of the place where he fought, period.
Yeah. Shout out, by the way, to Tim Bradley and Andre Ward for just going after Valdez.
I don't give them credit for that at all. I thought that was Bush League. Yes. No, not at all. And I have huge respect for Bradley and Ward. All-time great fighters. Ward's already going to, you know, already elected to the Hall of Fame. Bradley should be in the Hall of Fame. I covered their whole careers. Massive respect for them. I feel like to say, I don't remember hearing what Ward said, but in terms of Tim Bradley, to say, I hope he gets knocked out when you're calling the fight, to me is
that was a little over the top. But what he said,
unacceptable and unprofessional.
What he said though during the broadcast was basically that this fight shouldn't be happening. That was what I kind of.
That's fair. Onto that's different. That. I was.
No,
talking
you're right.
About
the knockout thing that was before, and that was, yeah, that's a little bit over the top. But to be on the air on your network, the network that's paying you probably a substantial amount of money, and to say this fight shouldn't be happening, that takes some stones, Dan. It really does. And
no, I Bradley, don't all the credit in the world that, saying that to me is that's admirable. I have no problem with that. It was Timothy Bradley. So maybe that's what Ward said. And Bradley also
Ward,
said,
no, Ward criticized Eddie Reynoso for not being available this week to kind of talk about the fact that first Canelo, now Valdez, two guys tested positive for different substances, not being available. Eddie Reynoso, by the way, tweeted out afterwards, said, I'm available now. I want to keep the focus on the fight and on the fighter. But, you know, going, I like the, I'm not glossing over it. I like that part of
yeah, those are reason. Those are not, I'm in terms of those comments from Bradley and Ward, no problem. The one thing I did take exception was with Bradley saying that the guy should, I hope he gets knocked out in a fight where you are the broadcaster. You're now biased yourself against calling the fight ahead of whatever happens. So, again, I love Tim Bradley. I just thought that was a real bad move right there.
No, I agree. And I mean, I learned from Lampley and Max over the years, never predict the outcome of a fight you're calling because it, you know, creates the perception that you're leaning one way or the other. And Bradley took it to another level with that comment about Valdez. Dan, always great to catch up with you, man. Subscribe to Dan's newsletter on Substack. It's Fight Freaks Unite. It's terrific. It comes out every single day. I subscribe. You should as well. Always good to talk, man.
All right, Chris. Thank you very much. A little feisty today. I like it.
I'm always trying to be feisty.
No, both of us. Both of us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, you could. It's good content.
All right, man. Hope to see you down the road.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Dan Rafael for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever you can download podcasts. And next week, I'm going to try to catch up with Sergio Mora.
Mannix, I'm a man on the run, and I'm not doing your fucking podcast. We're not doing it, bro. I'm a man on the run. On the run!